Hi, this is Marisol Baca, living in Fresno, California, and I teach composition in Fresno at Fresno City College. I've been writing for quite some time. I went to school in Ithaca, New York, got my MFA in creative writing. I pretty much spend most of my time teaching and writing and hanging out with my dogs and my wonderful fiancé. The poetic license that I'm doing today is a story about a remembered place, which is the kitchen in my grandmother's and grandfather's house in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I grew up. This is closely linked to a lot of the feelings and the ideas that come out in my writing right now and are directly linked to the new book that I've just finished writing, which is called Revelado. And it's about growing up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and also growing up in Fresno, California, where I am now, and the connection between the two and the landscape and the people. What I remember about my grandmother is the kitchen in her old house in Alameda, a section of Albuquerque we called the Valley in New Mexico. My grandmother, Grandma Lily, that's what I call her, that was her place, the kitchen, built by my grandfather like the rest of the house, and all white, painted. It was small to think of now, and about the size of my own kitchen. It was not filled with knickknacks. It was cool and clean and had the acidic smell of green and red chili and thick garlic. There wasn't much else to that smell. It was a functional smell, the kind of lingering smell that was of food, regular as the sunrise, and coated the room. Like I said, the kitchen was small. There was a doorway that led to the rest of the open house and a heavy screen door that led out to the wine room, the garage, and the outside, where there was mostly desert. It had a white ceramic sink and white ceramic tiles and white walls and a small ledge above the sink and a potted plant. From the window, you could see the dust and desert of that sun-drenched place outside that one might call a backyard. The refrigerator was old. It was a relic. It had the kind of metal handles that warned anyone who might want to open it needlessly. Later, it was a new refrigerator. The white eggshell exterior glowed whiter, even in the white of the room, and a gas stove. This was where the cast iron plate was. And for a time, my grandmother rolled out tortillas and placed them out so that the rounded seal cooked right through onto the tortilla. And the kitchen table, the one I have currently in my 1950s-built home, is strangely the exact copy of it. I acquired mine by providence. When I was poor and couldn't afford one, I got my sister's, probably found at an estate sale or yard sale in the 80s. It's got a white speckled laminate on top, and the steel legs bow out femininely. It has a laminate that scallops under the main tabletop, adding to the feminine look. It's small and sturdy and was placed against the wall in the kitchen. It was placed in a way that made it a mere extension of the wall, cream and white and spotted and always cool to touch. There was an old meat grinder on the edge, clamped down like a vise. On special occasions, my grandmother would allow me to place frozen pieces of pork in the grinder. I was immensely interested in parts of the kitchen, and I was also a child, that is, easily distracted, and I wish I had paid even more attention. A house like this has areas of interest that a young child would take advantage of in discovering. My great-grandmother, Manuelita, used to live with my grandparents, and she slept in a far room on the side that I would visit to get lavender candies and look at the crocheted blankets on the big brass bed and the dark wooden dresser that my grandpa made. After my great-grandmother died, I was too scared to go into the room, but the idea of it far away at the end of the hallway kept me enthralled. So I was only in the kitchen late at night looking for where my grandmother put the moon pies and licorice. But I'm getting away from the topic. This is why poetry is so important to me. It's always the columnar rope that ties me in. When I become so engrossed in a tangent, it says, go back. There is still something to be said about the kitchen. Go back. The kitchen table was where the preparation took place. Although I never remember my grandmother peeling garlic, I know she did, or crack an egg. How did I miss this? The things I remember are what a spoiled child remembers. The carne adobada she pulled out hot from the oven, the plate of tortillas already plated, the butter melting on them, the beans the way we eat them in a bowl mixed with red chili, and then assembling at the table or sitting at the dining table or standing somewhere in between. My grandmother had it good. The men, her sons, were there at lunch to eat and talk with my grandfather, to check in on her every day and to tell her how they loved her food. My grandfather, who is the local barber, would be there for lunch around the corner from the barbershop and angling for the wine room. Yes, we had a room cut out into the dirt that housed large glass canisters of wine that my grandfather would make every year. The children, my cousins, and I would have already eaten, but the men would just be digging in. They filled plates with red chili and beans and fried eggs. These were men that smiled long. It's a Garcia thing to have this kind of smile. That may not mean anything outside of a family, but we all have a side of the family which wears smiles like mountain caps, and sides of the family that are tall and brooding and think about mistakes and death. That would be the other side of the family. This family was Valley family. They worked in the sun. They worked with their hands. They drank deeply, and they picked fights a lot, but they smiled too. But the kitchen table was left to preparation and lunch meals and meeting long and drinking quince wine from mason jars. As Joy Harjo puts it in her poem so plainly, our dreams drink coffee with us as they put their arms around our children. They laugh with us at our poor, falling down selves and as we put ourselves back together once again at the table. The kitchen table was a ghost story filled with the movement around it and the blur of time. The kitchen table was the sentineled griffin in white, always leading out and away to other backyards, to the wine room and its drunken debauchery. The kitchen table was where the aunts and mothers assembled the sugar and cinnamon for bizcochitos and peeled and chopped garlic and peeled the membrane of the chili from its waxy and roasted skin. It was where we were forced to get on our knees one night to pray for our drunken fathers and uncles singing and fighting in the clay-worn room, dug into the ground. That night, the kitchen was scrubbed clean by my aunts and mothers. And so I did see some things when I peeked in from my childhood to see what happens when adults must eat and tender their lives together. Harjo also says, the world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live. And I would add to that, it's about the other hunger. Yes, the hunger that creates and builds a kitchen, to house a kitchen table, to feed the sons and to nourish the children, to fill the child's mind of memory and the life with substance and the smell of food already prepared and eaten and put away and forgotten in the mind of the stomach. The hunger that doesn't forget the woman who made it hers and used it and cleaned it and made it larger than what it was.